Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times. England take on New Zealand in a World Cup semi-final for the first time in nearly a quarter of a century. And if that's not enough, Wales play South Africa, although Warren Gatland's struggling to find 15 Welshmen fit enough to get out on the pitch. Eddie Jones has resisted the urge to beef up his line-out against the All Blacks, but we've gone for the strongest lineup of Times talent ever assembled. So the two teams have now been selected, and a couple of bold selections from both coaches, really. Steve Hansen going with Scott Barrett in the back row in place of Sam Kane. And probably two reasons for me. The first is to give the New Zealand pack that kind of extra ballast that they probably need against what looks like a fairly formidable England eight. And secondly, to obviously add to the line-out strength that they already have, obviously with Brodie Retallack, Sam Whitelock, Kieran Reid and Ardie Surveyor, and now Scott Barrett. They are going with five out-and-out line-out jumpers against this England eight. So, you know, that's fairly bold. And Eddie Jones has picked George Ford back in the starting 15. He will play at 10, of course, with Owen Farrell at 12 and Manu Tuilagi named as 13. And in the same way as Steve Hansen has given a nod of respect to England up front, it's maybe a similar selection from Eddie Jones in the England backline, where he knows that a kicking game has got to be absolutely on the money against this pretty lethal All Black counter-attack. So I've been doing a little digging back into the statistics of England against New Zealand. Doesn't make great reading for England fans. New Zealand have won 33 out of the last 41 test matches against England, so that's a pretty impressive 80% win ratio for the All Blacks. And actually, I'll tell you what I've found quite surprising is since 1905, there's only been 41 test matches. So there's a bit of scarcity value in the fact that we don't play the All Blacks very often. And some further bad news for England fans is that we've lost all three Rugby World Cup matches against New Zealand. Obviously, in 1999, I was playing myself, and we'll get onto that in a little while. But the last time England won a test match against New Zealand was, of course, 2012, 38-21 at Twickenham. I think for me, you know, what do England need to do to win the game? Well, you know, quite simply, they've got to have the game of their lives, in my opinion. But they can do. They've got that belief. Often, a lot of teams are beaten before a ball's even been kicked against New Zealand because of their incredible Rugby World Cup record, because of the quality that they have in the team, and because people don't necessarily believe. And I think that word belief is really important for me. You know, when I look at this England team, you've got so many British and Irish Lions who have been down to New Zealand in the recent past and have come out on the other side. You know, they've not only drawn a series in New Zealand, but they've also beaten the All Blacks in New Zealand. And you can't underestimate what that does for a player, you know, in terms of giving him that confidence and that belief that England can go all the way. And I'm looking specifically at the Saracens kind of core of players, the likes of Mako and Billy Vunipola, you know, George Cruz and Mario Itoje, Jamie George, Owen Farrell. You know, those players have all been there and done it at the very, very highest level. And I think for that reason, I think I give England a much stronger chance than possibly others would do in this same fixture. And I've seen a lot of England teams go head-to-head against the All Blacks and you know, come very, very close. And there's no doubt that in this game, this matchup, the scores between the two sides is getting closer and closer. Yes, England haven't won and since 2012, but the reality is that they've been getting closer and closer and closer. And I think when you look at the two matchups of the teams, there's a lot of things that are discussed and talked about. But the one thing that's probably not mentioned is that kind of psychological edge. And I just think that England will have the belief that they can go out there and achieve something very, very special. So let's find out what the Ruck team really think. Owen Slott, Stephen Jones, Alistair Reid, and our very own World Cup egghead, Alex Lowe.
So we're back in room 3412, the top broadcasting spot in the whole of Tokyo. I'm here with Jonesy. Alex Lowe's popped up. This is like a breakfast recording, so he's just making his coffee.
I am, yeah. It's a coffee bag. Premium drip coffee, but it's not really dripping very well.
Yeah, you meant to steal those and take them camping. That's the whole idea. I don't actually use them.
And this, the Scottish accent you're just hearing is our Wales correspondent.
Yes.
That's Alistair Reid. Mm-hmm. Reedy, you've had a sort of conversion this week. You sent the jocks home. Well, they've been there a week and a half.
Last man standing, holding up the salt iron, Tokyo. But yeah, here on my own. All that was left was to become a bit Welsh. So that's what I've done.
Tiny bit of Welsh.
My brother lives in Wales. Come on, I've got connections.
He's been released in 2 years, hasn't he? There seems to be someone missing. I can't think who it is.
God.
But it was, I'll give you a clue, it was the man who finally got down to Tokyo to compare the pod. Did it once and is no longer here. Now, apparently, he's run into severe train problems because the Japanese JR line is not working properly.
The public transport is notoriously unpredictable, isn't it?
Of course. Yeah.
Has a train turned up on time in Tokyo.
Once the JR line, as Lawrence said, stopped, that only gave him a choice of 16 lines and 14 taxi companies to get down here, so you can understand why he couldn't make it. Anyway,
Jonesy, should we talk about England?
Well, it is the biggest game they played since 2003, and no question. I include the 2007 World Cup final in that. It feels really massive out here. You can sense at home that it's almost all or nothing there. Playing up against a really good team who have proved so far to be unbeatable. They've got a decent side out, England. Once again, we've had the Ford Farrell controversy, which I just cannot believe that anyone in their right mind could keep on shopping and changing the tens. I just do not see that.
But, Alex?
So it didn't work for Michael Checker, did it? He chopped and changed all the way through the World Cup. The difference here to counter Jones' thing is the team that Eddie picked for that Australia game, which caused a lot of controversy because they dropped George Ford to the bench, executed a game plan so perfectly that you couldn't criticise it afterwards, and clearly he thinks they can play in a different way. What he's been talking about for probably the last year or so is not having a first 15 anymore and having a team that he can pick, a squad that he can select from to suit a certain game plan for a certain opposition. My question about doing this is that I think Owen Farrell is less effective at 12 than he is at 10. George Ford has been one of England's better players through the pool stages, but I think to counter what Jonesy's saying, England would say it's not about continuity now, it's about picking the best 15 for that game plan, for that opposition.
I get the horses for courses thing, and it worked against Australia, but Australia were a much weaker team. Isn't one of the problems is that you're saying to the All Blacks, you know, we're playing to your strengths, not ours.
Listen, I'm not an apologist here for Eddie or I just think that he would view it the opposite, that this is our team to beat them.
I sort of agree. I would say that the team he picked last week for Australia was more to counter them, and this team appears more to be a team that says we think we can beat you.
I think, so the timings yesterday of the team announcements, there were 5 hours between New Zealand and England. England were intending, or certainly the day before, all the information was that George Cruz was going to start, which made a lot of sense because at Twickenham last November, in the second half, the All Blacks destroyed England's line-out. They brought Scott Barrett on in the back row, and England lost five of their own throws. Sorry, they lost four and conceded one penalty. So it sort of made sense to bring George Cruz back. And then by the time we got to the announcement, Eddie Jones had actually plumped for Courtney Laws, which was 5 hours after the All Blacks had just named Scott Barrett in the back row. And, you know, there were a couple of conversations about, gosh, I wonder whether Eddie might even react to that. I'd have been amazed if he had done. But Slotty and I were talking about, in some ways, he's gone away from having to try and compete in the line-out. Barrett's a big physical ball carrier. So is Courtney Laws. So I don't think England would be worried about Barrett. But actually, England will probably look at having the two schemers at 10 and 12, the kamikaze kids at 6 and 7, who have been so crucial to how England have played so far. And Eddie will look at it and look at the All Blacks, who think they've got an extra line out forward and an extra ball carrier, and England will think they've gone away from their two open sides, we've got our two, and we'll go and chase them and harry them and compete on the ground. It feels like Eddie's just gone, this is our team to win this game.
But Jones, you think this is madness, don't you?
Yeah, total. Why is Eddie suddenly rewriting the way you pick the team? I mean, the Welsh team has been the same all the way through. The All Blacks, apart from Barrett, has been the same for the big games, so have all the other teams, because that's what you do. You pick the best team. And this thing that you can say, right, the game will be like this, so we will pick players for this game. Rugby then does not work.
It will be interesting. Like, I guess Australia, Eddie and England had a game plan, and they picked a team for it. And as you said, Sotty, Australia just played into their hands 80 minutes. If New Zealand come up with something, and Eddie's selection is not ideal for what's happening, how soon he can risk making a change, which he has done before, but not since his first year, I don't think. I mean, he whipped off Luther Burrell after half an hour.
Tamana Harrison after half an hour. Got the whip.
And so he has a reputation for being prepared to make big calls and big changes early if the expectation of the game doesn't turn out to be the reality. But taking off George Ford after 25 minutes would be an enormous call.
Be nonsense. But the thing is, we know what he's got to do. The big ball carriers have got to get over the advantage line, over it, with rocket tackle or whatever. Then the next big ball carrier's got to come down, because Ireland never went over the advantage line, never put New Zealand on the back foot, so that whenever the ball came back, New Zealand was steaming forward on the front foot, and Ireland were just going through the phases, going back and back and back. And he's got to, never mind what he thinks he's doing, he's got to get his big ball carriers to put him on the back foot. Hopefully, maybe he might even get some purchase in the scrum. But that is going to take a lot of endurance, a lot of running, a lot of recovery from the England forwards. And Manu Tuilagi, who's massive. And that's how they've got to turn the tide. And whether they can do that for 80 minutes, I doubt.
Jonesy, I'm just interested. So you're really firm of the opinion that, you, as you say, you find your best team and stick to it, and you don't think that you can be tactically flexible and choose a different team for. I know what you're saying. I mean, every World Cup's been won by finding your best team and improving it and getting better and better as you go along. So, I mean, Eddie's been very clear. I'm trying to do something different.
Well, when you say right, we've now got this different opposition. What if the different opposition don't want to play like that? It's just nonsense. It's absolute. It would begin with B. It's absolute nonsense. And this thing, we got a lecture from Eddie last week saying, "Oh, you."
So we're thinking that your word beginning with B.
Yeah, Barrett. You guys. He said, "You guys don't report rugby as you did 30 years ago. 30 years ago, if you were dropped from the team, you were devastated. As was George Ford last week, devastated. He didn't say, oh, this is great, I've got another role for the last 20 minutes. And if he wasn't devastated, why did we see a picture of one of the coaches with his arm round him? Ditto George Cruz. People are devastated if they're not picked to play in the team. As simple as that.
The All Blacks have made changes, horses for courses change as well, haven't they, you'd say, Alex?
Yeah, and the All Blacks have made a selection specifically for this game, which you now, when you look back over the last year, has Steve Hansen been preparing for this game in the same way that Eddie Jones has, in that they both, on the day the draw was done, they looked at the likely scenario and it was an England All Blacks semi-final. The All Blacks have picked Scott Barrett at six. He's a lock forward. He's never started a test match at blindside flanker, but he's come on a lot. He came on in the second half against Ireland last week. He came on at six against Ireland last November and against England last November, making a huge difference in the line-out. So that's a specific horses for courses selection. And he's picked a player to start in a test match in a position that he never has done. And I think if England had done that, Jonesy would be even more annoyed than if they'd just reshuffled their midfield and picked players who have played 50 caps in those roles.
I think this World Cup has generally been sort of fascinating in that respect, in that coaches have started to go off the script or sort of rewrite the way it should be done. I mean, if you look at the All Black wings, for instance, I mean, they've introduced two wingers who, you know, we like to think that you've got to have at least 20 caps, should have been there for 2 years, know what you're doing. They picked two wingers who came sort of straight off the rack, if you like. As you say, Scott Barrett playing his first ever test match at blindside, and Eddie Jones making up as he goes along.
And the All Blacks changed this year the whole attacking formation, moving the world's best fly half to fullback, which is, you know, there is a lot of tactical evolution going on. I mean, speaking of which, I saw the... do you remember when England beat New Zealand back in 2002 with Johnny Wilkerson's little chip over the top?
And yeah.
Try, when you watch that try back, it's staggering how much time he was given. He got the ball, and the New Zealand defence just all stand off him.
And it's not a clever little chip, is it? It's a bloody up and under.
It's almost an up and under. And he's in there 22, and the New Zealand defence just stand off him. And when you watch that, you know, compared to the game that we'll see on Saturday, it's incredible how much the lack of intensity in that All Blacks line not to chase him down and smash him. But that's a long time ago, but it does show that the game is moving on.
So what battles must England win? The record against New Zealand, they always compete, but they've lost 15 out of the last 16, something like that. Jones is talking about we've got to get the big ball carriers over. What else do they have to do?
That's the crux of it, isn't it? So
I think Ben Youngs is
box kicking.
Youngs and his kicking. He's got to have the best kicking day of his life, really, isn't he? Yeah. I think he should reduce the number of kicks massively, because I think the All Blacks will win the aerial battle, because I still don't think we're that good at it. If he's going to kick and it's not going to be bang on, if he's going to hand them possession, then he's giving them a chance to score a try every single time.
It starts with the collisions and the game and momentum, which, as Jones said, when Ireland, as soon as Ireland got rocked, they just fell over. They had no chance of stopping that momentum. And those collisions on the gain line, who can win that, will set the platform. Because if England can stop the All Blacks, or if England can gain some front foot, then they have two strategists in behind who I'm sure will kick a lot. The intelligence and the accuracy of the kicking game is massive. Because if they get it right, then, as we said earlier, they've got, you know, the way they've played previously, they've now got the two open sides who are just going around smashing everything. And it brings them really into the game. But if the kicks are poor, then no matter how good the chase is, you can't compete for it. You can't isolate the ball carrier on his own or, you know, behind the game line, and then you lose it. So I think it's the collisions and the accuracy of that kicking game.
I think they'll radically change it. Ben Youngs' big kicks, he hasn't got the elasticity in his leg, and he hasn't got the one to really, really put it up high, and he keeps on overhitting, which will be dangerous. Yeah. I think he's got to find a point where every kick is recoverable and chaseable with two wings who are really boisterous. And if that means he only chips it at 10 yards over the line-out or 5 yards over the line-out, if it's contestable, at least it stops Barrett 20 metres back. I think if he tries to put kicks up over Barrett, he hasn't got the ability, and it'll be hell to play. So okay. cut back the length of kicks.
Just to intrude for a moment, I've just spotted a bullet train go by the window, which I suspect is Lawrence's name.
Is that the Lawrence Express?
It could be.
I can see a balding head looking out the window.
Got one top new item, not top old item, returning item for this podcast, which I think has been known as Jones Moans.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jones's Moans, coming in at number four, ramen restaurants.
Well, ramen restaurants, I went to one last night briefly with Nick the Moose Kane. And the thing is with them, you go in there and a huge queue up and down the stairs. when you get down there, first of all, you've got to put your money into a slot machine and press the button as if you're choosing a bar of chocolate. But then you're ushered into the ramen room itself. And all it is a succession of little wooden boxes where you sit with the palmet on either side, and you can't even talk to the bloke next to you. It's individual dining. Well, you can sort of reach around to say, Kenny, what have you ordered, and all that sort of thing. But then, anyway, what happens then is a drawbridge comes up in front of you, an unseen figure plonks this big dish of ramen, pulls it down again, and if you want anything else like a beer or a serviette, you've got to press this red button. Shoots up again, they put a form through, and you tick it. But it was actually rather nice. But I'll tell you what.
That's not a very Scots of Jones's moan.
It was the oddest convivial thing I've ever been. And I would moan about it because I want to sit around the table with my mates. I don't want to sit there with some unseen bloke sticking it in there.
Yeah, you're not worried that Nick knew this is how it worked and well, didn't want to sit around the table with
no,
you.
No, he might have been. But anyway, we both enjoyed it. But then, actually, we were so hungry, we had a pizza next door.
All right, brilliant. So this was supposed...
That was a moan. It was okay, a shocker.
This is a concise item where we bring up the chart of Jones's moans and he gives us a quick sort of a...
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, quick fire.
Sorry.
Number three, Liam Williams.
Oh, just absolutely disgusting. I moan at the fates, the injury gods, the Welsh medical team. They've completely and utterly failed. No, they haven't. But, I mean, that is cruel, horrible luck. It's like England losing George Ford just before the game. Then they got no one to say, we're doing horses for courses. Right.
Coming in at number two. Laptops, the fine things. Steve, what's wrong with them?
Right. Hundreds of people make laptops and all the other IT stuff, okay? But do they actually ever have standardization in terms of chargers and all the paraphernalia that goes through them? Do they hell? Yesterday I went to four shops all over Tokyo, four individual shops, four individual taxis. None of them had the blinking charger that I wanted.
You're still using that 1995 Toshiba, aren't you?
No, it's called a Tandy.
At least you've now got a Japanese Amazon Prime account.
I had to join Japanese Amazon. That's going to come in handy in future, isn't it?
So anyway. So if you don't file anything for the Sunday Times on this weekend, then we know why.
I'm a trooper.
Okay,
I've got two pigeons in my loft.
All right, top of the charts, Jones's Moans is number one, The Hacker.
Oh, come on.
Go on, let it go.
As the Richard Williams in the Guardian said in the week, The Hacker always looks ludicrous. Now it is absolutely fatuous. It is a bunch of time wasters going through endless posing and preening. And I tell you what, it's holding up the game. It gets they gather around in a circle, gurning for about half an hour before it even starts. I tell you what, it is pitiful. It's corporate. It's only there for TV and sponsors. You're telling me it's a Maori ritual in the hearts of the players. You must be joking. And it's about time they canned it.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Wales against South Africa. Well, a lot of problems for Warren Gatland, a few headaches for the medical team. No Navidi in the back row, no Liam Williams. And what news of Jonathan Davis, who, of course, had to pull out at the 11th hour against France in that quarterfinal? I think he is so crucial. His selection, they'll be holding everything crossed, of course, with the Wales coaches because... He's just such a big, big player for Wales. And I guess the question you've got to ask yourself is, are the players who are coming in to replace the likes of Navidi and Williams strong enough to win a World Cup semi-final? You know, have they got that strength in depth? South Africa, for my mind, look a very strong, very settled side. I thought they coped with the emotion of the quarterfinal against Japan incredibly well. They just sort of almost held them at arm's length, like an older brother just sort of toying with you, really. As good as Japan were, they just looked very, very comfortable with a very strong squad and also a very strong bench as well. So the only change for South Africa, no Cheslin Kolbe, of course. So it's going to be interesting for me to see how will Wales set out to play. You know, they, for some reason, looked strangely flat against France, and they struggled to create any kind of momentum in the game and didn't really look like themselves, to be honest with you. So Warren Gatland's got a bit of a job to do in terms of the motivational stakes, him and Sean Edwards, because, you know, this will be his legacy, really. They went out to South Africa, of course, in the quarterfinals at Twickenham, and, you know, they South Africa broke them in round about the sort of 70 to 80 minute mark. So, you know, for me, Wales have really got to come out the blocks firing, and Warren Gatland will want to go out on a high, no doubt about it. And obviously there's a lot of talk about what's happening with the All Blacks in a few years' time, but Warren Gatland will want to go out on a high for sure. So let's find out what the Ruck team really think. Owen Slot, Stephen Jones, Alistair Reid, and our very own Alex Lowe.
So Reid, you're our Welsh specialist now.
They probably,
They got enough players fit enough to play in this game?
Well, if they bring Jonesy in, I think that's their only chance now. They've scraped over the line in a load of games. They haven't really done anything to set the tournament alight, but they keep, you know, they keep getting over that line. Whether they can against South Africa, especially with the injury crisis they've got going at the moment, I doubt it. To be honest, I think South Africa are just too strong at the moment. They'll pound them up front. They won't do Wales as they did Japan, but they'll play a similar kind of game, and they will probably win.
Do you think we should just name all the whole list of Welsh players who would be in the team if they were fit?
Well, there's not many, but I mean, I've always doubted if they could win the World Cup without Faletau. I think it's just one of the all-time great Welsh number eight.
Well, I don't think they could win it without Liam Williams now, and that's two.
France exposed the absence of Jonathan Davis in the quarterfinal. He's massive for them. A massive, massive miss.
I'd go along with Jonathan Davis as well. Jonathan Davis at less than 100% is an absence, even if he's on the pitch. I think they will really struggle if they don't have him. And I find it very odd that they tried to bolster their midfield resources. After Navidi went out, they brought in Owen Lane, when Scott Williams was the more obvious choice. He's fit and playing again. So Jonathan Davis, if he's on the pitch but he's not at full power, then you're missing quite a lot there.
Yeah, that does make a massive difference. I do think that if Jonathan Davis is fit, that they'll still be competitive. I don't think they're good enough to win it, because bits are starting to fall off, but I think they'll be incredibly competitive because they're beautifully coached, in total defiance of the raw material which Wales haven't got. I mean, has anyone ever managed to get into the semi-final of the World Cup with total nothing to pick from in terms of the Welsh regions? I don't think they have. It's a staggering achievement. Dan Biggar and Gareth Davies are magnificent competitors. Adam Beard is going to be a great player. I don't think he's going to be an Alan Wynn, but he is going to be a really fine player. And I think if they have a little bit from Jake Ball, a little bit from Adam Beard, he'll compare favourably. But I just wonder whether Ross Moriarty, the only big, really big guy in the back row, has got the power to take them all on, you know. So Wales will have on their side a bit of craft and nous, which sometimes South Africa don't. But they are massive, they're up for it, and I think South Africa will be favourites.
Just on the sort of the poor Wales thing, I mean, you say that Gareth Davies and Dan Biggar have been magnificent competitors, completely agree. But neither of them would probably have been in Warren Gatland's first choice team if Rhys Webb hadn't gone to Toulon and if Gareth Anscombe had been fit.
I don't agree with that at all. Don't agree with that. First of all, I think
I know that you would pick Biggar ahead of Anscombe any day.
Every day, including Sunday.
Anscombe was being picked ahead of Biggar.
He was at the time, but it was, you know, Anscombe would go off and Biggar would come on and dominate. Biggar is a force of nature. Anscombe is an efficient player. Scrum half, I think Gareth Davies would have been the scrum half, never mind if Rhys Webb had been available. Gareth Davies is absolutely not the classic scrum half, but he is an unbelievable competitor.
I think this is a game that is built for Dan Biggar as well. It's exactly the type of contest against a physical Springbok team in a World Cup semi-final. He just has the for me, I agree with Jonesy. I think I'd have had him starting to the Six Nations too. I know it worked for them having Anscombe and then Bigger closing out, but just feels like, you know, if Wales are going to have a chance, he's going to have a massive day, and it is just the kind of game and kind of backs against the wall situation that he really thrives on. And yeah, I think he's superb, and if they're going to win, then he's going to have a huge game.
I think they are the classic team that's a lot, you know, far bigger than the sum of its parts. I
mean, which is Gatland's one of his greatest strengths. Is
indeed, I mean, I watch quite a lot of those players in the Pro 14 playing against Scottish sides regularly, and you know, frankly, in club duty, if you call it that, regional duty, you know, they don't really impress. But in a Wales shirt, in a Grand Slam, they've been South Africa the last four times, albeit not a fully loaded South Africa, but when you only play what's in front of you.
Just to chat about South Africa as well, because they've had a rough time losing players because of their economy. In fact, the whole economy is a complete shambles down there. They've got crime and all that, and I just think it'd be nice for them, for the same reason as Welsh fans and English fans, because I think Razu Erasmus has done a great job. And I actually got a lot of affection for the Springboks.
How good do we think they actually are as a team, though? So we're going into the tournament, a lot of people were tipping them as their winners. They haven't had a definitive performance here or anything like it. I mean, they looked most impressive when they strangled Japan, but that was a sort of professional job on a team that they were sort of put on this earth to kill off, really, weren't they?
I think perhaps losing to New Zealand in the opening weekend maybe wasn't the worst thing that could happen to them. It sort of put them under the radar. It kept them honest.
All right, Alex, can you see an argument for Wales winning this?
Not as strongly, actually, an argument as I can see England in the other game. Can I see Wales winning it? Yes, they can. I just fear that they're losing too many key players. Liam Williams, as we said earlier, is massive, and the box just seem ready to rumble, and I think the power will win it for them in the end. And I think pre-tournament we all thought an All Blacks Springboks final was most likely, and that's what it looks like.
I could have seen Wales winning this with a full, fully loaded, fully fit. I just feel really sad that they're not going to get the opportunity.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there, Slotty. I think that Wales have the loss of Liam Williams is brutal for them. If they get the centres out, the first choice centres, then good for them. But they are carrying injuries, no question. And I South Africa, they're holding back Cheslin Kolbe. He is injured, but Erasmus said yesterday that he's got one eye on the final already, and I think he's got every right to.
Really,
I think that what Wales got to do is they've got to still be in the game after this reserve Springbok front row comes on, because that's going to be a big moment. They've got two genuine front rows. When they came on, if Wales can absorb that and then they're still in the game with 15 to go, then they got a chance, because I think South Africa will start flapping. But I think Wales will lose by single figures. But look, there's obviously two great games as well.
That Erasmus comment had passed me by, but it won't have passed Warren Gatland by.
In fairness to Erasmus, he did say, look, don't take this the wrong way.
Warren Gatland will take it exactly.
Don't take this the wrong way. By the way, where are we staying? Which hotel are we in for the final?
It's an interesting comparison, that, because Johnny May has been struggling for England this week, and I get the impression that if this was an average Premiership week, he would have been rested. But they just want to chuck everything at this game because they feel they have to. Whereas South Africa seem to be doing the opposite. They'd be saying, we're not going to make any risks because we want to be at our best for the following week if we get there.
And they've gone with the 6-2 bench split again, with the idea of not overexerting the first choice forwards. In fairness, they have, if they get to the final, they've got a 6-day turnaround, as opposed to England and New Zealand, who will have a 7-day. And I think that's all factored into Erasmus's thinking on this one.
Should we do How Clever Is Arthur again?
Yeah, right.
Okay, our listeners from the previous podcast were wildly impressed by Alex Lowe's knowledge of rugby in the world, and they've...
Arthur knows everything.
Some of our listeners sent in some questions, and so we're going to have a sort of a follow-up. So here we go, just five this time, five questions. England are staying in the Tokyo version of Disneyland. Which England player is the biggest Disney fan?
So I think before I got here, I'd have instinctively said Johnny May, but I've since learned that it's Jonathan Joseph. Slightly unlikely.
Very unlikely, because you thought he'd go for something so edgy.
Yeah, I thought he'd think he was too cool for... Disney, but
yeah, he sort of dresses like a rap artist, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Joseph.
Yeah, no, that's correct. That was Anthony Watson who betrayed his friend Jonathan Joseph.
Was that a stitch up from Anthony Watson?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So this was Anthony Watson who wrote into this podcast.
He's a fan. I heard he was a fan. Yeah.
What was Jonathan Joseph's favourite Disney film?
Frozen.
Brilliant, that, isn't it? Absolutely wonderful.
My daughter's drawn out of that one.
Yeah.
It's only three.
There are three Barrett brothers that face England tomorrow in the semi-final. How many more Barrett brothers are there in existence who let their family and their nation down by not making the squad?
Well, there's definitely one, because you retweeted your old article with one of them yesterday.
Yeah, it's a great story, that.
There are two more, unbelievably, two more Barrett brothers.
Yeah. I wonder how they feel. The older one's called Kane. Actually, Kane's got a good story, or a disappointing story. Kane was captain of New Zealand schools when he was 18. He was the first Barrett brother to get a professional contract. Played for the Blues, I think.
Hang on, he's supposed to be Arthur and knows everything.
Oh. I told him all this.
Oh, right, okay. Come on. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just trying to pretend I've got any knowledge. He played for the Blues. In his second season, he got a series of concussions and he was forced to retire. So they could actually well have been four. The young one's called Blake, and I don't know.
I think they should do one that, you know, that Judy Murray did, the embarrassing son that they never mentioned. And I think they've got they did this great video of the embarrassing son who's completely inept, and they've just hidden him away. People believed it. I would recommend anyone, you know, just Google it, or it's fantastically well done.
Question number four is moving away from rugby. So this is your wide knowledge. Seve Ballesteros has a tattoo of a golfer on his arm. Who is the golfer tattooed on his arm?
That is, I was quite surprised when I learned about this, but that is the golfer tattooed on Seve's arm is Seve. Was Seve.
Correct.
He's
good. He's good.
Was Seve. Which is so good. I just wouldn't have imagined Seve doing that. But,
yeah, brilliant.
But he did.
Brilliant. Okay.
And would you, Josie?
Well, I'll show you. I've got a tattoo of Seve on my arm.
You can't get your tattoos out.
If you've got a tattoo of your laptop lead on your arm.
No, you can't joke about that. That means you're in the mafia, though.
Yeah.
Finally, which company has the highest annual production of tyres? that it's fair to say that is also not a rugby question.
That's not a rugby question, but the answer is Lego.
Oh god.
Oh, dude, that
just knows everything. Boy. Goodness.
So, two incredible Rugby World Cup semi-finals to look forward to on Saturday, the 26th of October. Just to repeat, England versus New Zealand, 9 a.m. UK time from Yokohama. Followed by Sunday, the 27th of October, Wales versus South Africa, also at 9 a.m. UK time, Yokohama. My thanks to Owen Slott, Stephen Jones, Alistair Reid and Alex Lowe. We're excited. I'm sure you're excited. Wherever you watch those two wonderful games, I know you're going to have a fantastic time and keep everything crossed for the two Northern Hemisphere teams. The Ruck returns on Monday when we'll know who's reached the Rugby World Cup final. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now via Acast, iTunes, or your preferred podcast provider.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.